make a begin. Okay, so it's Parshas Vayera, which is on page 78. And just first of all, just to go through a little bit of an overview of the Parsha, you have it in front of you on your handout. Just pass that down, please. Thanks. Oh, sorry, here we are. Yep. Okay, it's just an overview. So the parasha begins with Hashem visiting Abraham after the circumcision. He was unwell. We have the story of the three angels visiting Abraham, one of them telling him he will have a son. We have a very interesting part where Avraham Avinu debates Hashem over the destruction of Sodom. And then Hashem eventually lets him know that he will destroy Sodom. The angels arrive in Sodom, they stay with Lot. Whole story there, the destruction of Sodom. We have a very fascinating part of the parasha where it talks about the birth of Ammon and Moab, which is when Lot's daughters escape with Lot. Lot's wife dies, and they have the perception that the whole world is destroyed, and in the desire to continue humanity, they commit incest with their father, and two sons are born. And from them come the two nations, Ammon and Moab. We've gone into this a different time, but fascinatingly enough, Ruth comes from them. And ultimately Mashiach actually is a descendant of this union, which is an interesting discussion on its own. We have a story of Sarah and Avimelech. And Avimelech tried to live with her and was unsuccessful, similar to what happened in Egypt. The birth of Yitzchak and Yishmael. Yishmael is having a bad influence over Yitzchak. And Sarah insists that Abraham sends him away, and he does. And then finally, at the end of the parasha, you've got the Akedah, the ultimate test of Abraham, which is the binding of Yitzchak. Okay. So what I want to do is just go through a couple of things at the beginning of the parasha, and then focus a little bit on the end of the parasha, which is the Akedah. So again, it's page 78. Where it says, Vayera Elav Hashem, and God appears to him, meaning him means Abraham. But Eloine Mamre, he was in the plains of Mamre, a person called Mamre. Uhoyoshev Pesach Oil Kachim Hayom, and he was sitting at the entrance to the tent in the heat of the day. Yeah? Just have a look at your handout. There's a Rashi that I've put there. The first Rashi, sorry, just ignore the first few words because I'm just telling you which pasuk it is. Rashi says, Vayera Elov, Levaker es hachoyle. Hashem came to visit the sick. Omar Rav Chama bar Chanina, Rashi quotes, Rav Chama, the son of Chanina, Yoim Shlishi lemilosei hoyo. It was the third day after Avraham Avinu was circumcised. Uboha Kadosh Baruch Hu, and God came, Vesho'al Bishleimoi, and greeted him and asked after his welfare. Famous thing, of course, we learn the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim from here. The Gemara says that all good, it says in the Pasuk that we should walk in the ways of God. Says the Gemara, what does it mean to walk in the ways of God? So the Gemara says that we have to learn from Hashem's attributes. Just like he visits the sick, we need to visit the sick. Just like he clothes the poor, we need to clothe the poor. Just like he buries the dead, we need to clothe the dead. Just like he comforts the mourners, we need to comfort the mourners, and so on. And there's an example of each thing where Hashem does it in the Chumash. Where Hashem visits the sick is this parasha, of course, where he comes to visit Avraham Avinu. I think I've shared this to you before, but it's beautiful just to mention it again. The Orach Chaim HaKadosh, and as many commentaries comment on this, that if it was a mitzvah of visiting the sick, so why did Hashem wait till the third day? Right? Why not right away? So one of the explanations is that there's actually a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that if someone takes ill, that besides very close family, you don't visit the person till the third day. Why? Because it says in the Shulchan Aruch, when a person becomes sick, I mean, obviously there's exceptions to the rule, or someone needs something and they call you, obviously, but I'm saying that in the routine mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, of visiting the sick, one tries not to draw such attention to the illness right away, like not to rouse sort of ein hara or whatever the case is. You try to keep a low key. If the person doesn't get better, and it's obvious that he's going to be ill for a while, then there comes a mitzvah to visit him or her, and then from the third day there's a mitzvah. So that's hinted in this fact that Hashem waited till the third day to visit Avraham Avinu. The obvious question of that is, the Orach Chaim points out, and he says that, well, Hashem is close family, so why why should he have to be bound with that halacha? If the halacha is that you don't visit someone who's sick for the first 3 days other than close family, Hashem surely is close family, right? And he says the answer is very simple. The reason there's a distinction between close family and not close family is because, see, that's why it's always interesting. Sometimes you have to go into the reason of something to understand why, how something's applied, right? So the reason, the difference between family and not family is that family keeps it private. And outside visitors talk. You know, they come visit, I went to visit this guy, tells his friend, and the friend spreads, and then suddenly everyone, the whole town knows about it. Close family, person becomes ill, they keep it quiet for the moment. However, Hashem doesn't apply, it doesn't apply to Hashem. If Hashem visits someone, it's headline news. So it doesn't matter that he's close family. The fact is, he'll create the same problem as others would create if they visit the person the first 2 days, and therefore, that halacha, although Hashem is close family, but that halacha would apply to him, and therefore, he didn't do that. Another interesting pshat of why Hashem waited till the third day, which the Rebbe explains in one of the talks, says the following. Generally, when a person visits a sick person, it says in Gemara, it says in many, many places, that it helps with the healing of the person. There's a Gemara which says that when you visit a sick person, you take away a 60th of the death, of the sickness, and so on. Okay? That's a general thing. So, Bikur Cholim is part of the process of healing the person. The problem with Hashem would be is when he visits a person, it's much more powerful than that. So therefore, when he would visit Avram, obviously from that moment on, and that was also expressed through the coming of one of the angels, that would be the end of it. That would be the healing of Avram, in other words, right? The total healing of Avram. Hashem, I mean, we visit, okay, so it's a mitzvah, we take away a 60th of the illness. But if Hashem would visit, which is hinted in many mafarshim, why Hashem visited in the first place, not just to ask how he's doing, but actually helping along with the healing and to heal him, that would have been the complete healing. And therefore Hashem didn't want to do that on the first day. Why? Or the second day. Why? Hashem tested Avram Avinu to go through a circumcision. Now, there wasn't just a test, it was also a mitzvah. Now, we know that most of the mitzvahs our forefathers kept before the Torah was given, but they weren't obligated to keep them, right? And there's a very big difference, we talked about this before, between the mitzvahs that the patriarchs and matriarchs did before the giving of the Torah and the mitzvahs we do today. The mitzvahs they did were more spiritual, didn't have such an effect on the physical world, whereas the mitzvahs after Matan Torah do, right? The whole idea. However, in order to connect, it says in Kabbalah, in order to connect our mitzvahs with the mitzvahs of the forefathers, Hashem had to command one mitzvah. He had to give him one mitzvah that would be similar to the mitzvah after Matan Torah. That was the mitzvah of Bris, where Hashem specifically commanded Avram Avinu to have a Bris, him and his children. So that mitzvah took on the status of post-Matan Torah mitzvahs, right? Different to all the other mitzvahs that the forefathers kept. Now, there's a very, very big important rule when it comes to mitzvahs. Part of the point of mitzvahs is to bring Hashem into the world. Part of the point of mitzvahs is to elevate the physical world and so on and so forth. And therefore, as an extension of that, one of the fundamental principles behind mitzvahs is that it needs to be done naturally. And when we say doing a mitzvah naturally, it means, it includes, I should say, the natural discomfort that sometimes comes with mitzvahs. And that's okay. That's what mitzvahs are supposed to be. And that's supposed to always be easy. Sometimes mitzvahs is a sacrifice and it comes a certain discomfort, and that's part of the program. That's part of the design of the mitzvah. So it's got to be done within the realms of nature. I'll just digress and tell you a very famous story that demonstrates this idea. The first Chabad Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe, was a whole story, but he was in jail once for 53 days. There was a lot of things. People that were against him, and they spread false libel to the government that he was supporting Turkey, because what happened at the time, the Alter Rebbe was sending money to poor people in Israel, because the idea of giving tzedakah to Israel is a very important thing. And at that time, Israel was under Turkish rule, the Ottoman Empire, who were at war with Russia, and therefore that was a great way to get him into trouble by saying that he's giving money to the enemy. Anyway, and he got landed. Okay. When he was in jail, it was a very fortified jail, and he tried to keep all the mitzvahs as best he could. And there was one mitzvah that he couldn't keep, and that was the mitzvah of Kiddush Levana. Kiddush Levana is a bracha you make on the new moon every month, right? And you couldn't do it. You can't do it inside a room. You have to be outside for it, right? Anyway, one night, where we're still within the time of the month where you can do that mitzvah, he was taken out of his cell to be interrogated. And because of that, the way it worked then is his cell was, the prison was surrounded by a moat. like a very, very big moat. And he was taken by a little ship across the moat, so he was able to be taken to a courthouse to be interrogated. And Al-Tareba saw his opportunity, and there was a moon, a clear moon. So he said to the driver of the boat, "Can you stop the boat? Because halacha is you're supposed to be stationary when you do the mitzvah, when you do the bracha of Kiddush Levana." So he said to the driver, he said, "Could you stop the boat so that I can do Kiddush Levana?" The driver wasn't interested. I mean, he was his prisoner. What is he? So he said, "Get lost." So through powers that the Alter Rebbe had, which were supernatural, the boat stopped on its own. And the Alter Rebbe then said the introductory paragraph to the bracha. There's the piece of Tehillim that you say before you say the bracha on the moon. And the Alter Rebbe said that paragraph, and then the boat continued to go. Then the Alter Rebbe turned to him and says, "Okay, now you're going to stop the boat." So he saw that he's dealing with someone that, you know, he nonstop up with. He said, "I'll stop it on one condition. They give me a bracha that I live long." He asked for a blessing, which he did, and there was a famous thing that this guy actually lived, this non-Jew, lived very, very long. So the question is, okay, it's a nice story, but the question on the story is, if the Alter Rebbe had the supernatural powers to be able to cause the boat to stop without having to worry about this guy, so why did he only say the first part of the Tehillim? He just should have stopped the boat and said the whole thing and finished. The answer is that's not the way you do a mitzvah. A mitzvah must be done naturally. If you have to be stationary through a mitzvah, then to say the bracha when the boat is stopped, but you've done it miraculously, that's taking away from the mitzvah. And Al-Tareb didn't want to do that. So therefore, he had to show that he had to be taken seriously. So that's he did use his power for that. And he said the one kapitel tilim, and then he let the boat go. And then he said, "Now will you stop it?" Because he wanted the person to stop it naturally. Right. So therefore, a similar idea like this. When Hashem gave the mitzvah to Avraham Avinu of a bris milah, and it was a test because Avraham Avinu was 99 at the time, right? In order for that to be a proper mitzvah, in order for that mitzvah to be defined and have the status of a post-Matan Torah mitzvah, it had to be part of the world, and if it had to be done naturally. Part of the natural order of having a bris milah is that you are injured, and it takes time to get right, especially if you're 99, right? So therefore, Hashem couldn't come on the first day. Because coming on the first day would have healed Avraham Avinu prematurely and miraculously, and that would have taken away from the mitzvah. And that's another reason why he waited to the third day, so that Avraham Avinu should have to go through that discomfort, because it's a natural consequence of the mitzvah. Why Hashem does that, a separate story. And discomfort, by the way, is a part of the mitzvah of Bris Milah. Even today, we know it affects the halacha. According to most opinions, in Israel it's different because they, over there they paskin like the Vilna Gaon, but according to most opinions, even though a bris is such an unbelievable mitzvah, and it's such a simcha, and everyone does it, and makes a party afterwards, but there's one bracha you don't make by a bris, and that's Shechiyanu. You don't make Shechiyanu, even though it's a one-time mitzvah. It makes sense, halachically, you should say Shechiyanu. Right? Why don't you? Because you never say Shechiyanu, even at a great simcha, when something's associated with pain. And because at the end of the day, the child does suffer discomfort, even though it's minimal, but it does suffer discomfort, therefore we don't make Shechiyanu, which is an interesting thing. Okay, so whatever reason, that's part of the covenant, because Bris Milah is a covenant between us and Hashem. I mean, you make a covenant, it's got to be associated with some discomfort. Covenant can't come that easy, whatever the reason is. But that's the natural order, the natural consequence of the mitzvah, and therefore Hashem didn't come to visit him before 3 days.
Well, then it's eternal and not new.
Sorry?
Well, then it's an eternal
mitzvah. Yeah, but at the beginning, even something that's eternal, but with the first time you do it, like... Many mitzvahs we don't make Shechiyonu once we do it many times, but the first time we do it, right? Yeah. I'm not sure. Maybe. Noach was. We said it last week, 2 weeks ago. Noach was born circumcised. Adam Rishon could be. I'm not sure. I don't remember. Possibly. Okay. Now, I want to just... share with you something that I think I have shared with you many years ago around Shavuos time, but I thought I'd share with you again because it's a very beautiful word. There's a famous question on this whole thing with the three. Okay, let's just read it inside. So let's have a look. Pasuk Beis, verse 2. Okay, so we know Avraham Avinu is sitting at the tent. He's desperate for visitors. He was an hospitable person. So Vayisa Eino Vayar, he lifts up his eyes and he sees Vinei Shloisha Noshim, the three people, Nitzovim Olo, that were standing there. And he saw them, Ayoros, the cross him, he ran to meet them, Pesach Oil, Mishtach Atzi, bowed down, and he begged them to stay. Okay. So skip a few Pesukim, and let's see Pasuk Vav, verse 6. Vayimahir Avraham ho'ehelo el Sarah. And Avraham Avinu ran to the tent. to where Sarah was. Yomer, he said, Mahari, quick, he says, Shloish Siyim Kemach, so let's take 3 measures of flour. Lushi, knead them up, Vasi Ugois, make, it says here, Ugois, which normally means cakes, but makes breads, in other words. Some say it was matzah, because it was Pesach time. Then, Vela Boka Ratza Avram, Avram Avinu runs to the cattle. Vayikach Ben Boka Rach Vatoiv, he took a really nice young calf, Vayitan Anar, and he gave it to the boy, the young boy, some say it was Yishmael. Vayimar, Lasus Oisoi, and he quickly, and he told him to be quick and to prepare it. According to the Torah Shebaal Peh, according to the Gemara, it was 3 calves, and he gave them tongue and mustard to eat, just in case you wanted to know the menu. It's a big delicacy. Yeah. Then he took chemo of a cholov, he took butter and milk, benaboker and the cattle asher also which he had prepared, and he gave it to them. Ve'oimed aleihem, and he stood next to them, tachas ha'eitz, under the tree. He was the waiter. Vayichelu, and they ate. There's a machloikas. A dispute among the commentaries, that they really eat, or they just make themselves eating, or do they come as a body and actually really eat, because they really were angels, and so on and so forth. But the concept is they ate, because the Gemara has that famous spraying, Azlas Lakata Avid Kinamusa, which means doesn't mean that, but I mean it's like the phrase, when you go to Rome, do as the Romans. So angels, when they come down here, they got to eat, because we eat. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he went up on the mountain for 40 days, he didn't eat, because there you don't eat, so he didn't eat either. Right? Okay. So the famous question, what's with the meat and milk? Right? But Avraham Avinu kept the whole Torah, right? Yeah, but he kept the Torah, we know that's one of the principles, that we know that Avraham Avinu kept the whole Torah. No, it wasn't given yet, you're right, it wasn't given yet, but he kept the whole Torah. Now, so one of the simple answers is, if you look on the order, it was a long meal. He first gave milk and then fleishiks. Mm-hmm. That's much easier, right? So, alpi halacha, if you give milk, you don't really have to wait that long afterwards. I guess some people wait an hour, but some people don't, so whatever. I don't know what minhag Avraham Avinu followed, but the bottom line is that it was butter, milk, and then meat. All you have to do after milk, really, is just to wash your hands and rinse out your mouth, and then you're fine. So, he gave him a lachaim, and then that's okay. Then they can have meat, right?
From what distance did he see these angels coming? He's got to prepare all this before they come.
No, he went to prepare them when they came. That's why it says he ran. He ran.
No.
It took a while. That's why what happened. So exactly the point. So probably the meat took a long time, because don't forget he had to shech the meat, he had to prepare it, salt it, kasher it, right? And pickle it. He had to prepare it. So it took him a couple of hours. You're right, 100%. Probably that's why he gave the milk first. He says, okay, I'll give you something light first, you know, we'll have some bread and milk and butter. Then you'll have a lachaim, and then we'll give you a good main dish, we'll give you meat, that's okay. Right? The problem is, there's a fascinating medrash, similar to a Gemara, but with a difference. The medrash starts off the same as the Gemara does, and the medrash says like this. So Moshe Rabbeinu went up on the mountain to receive the Torah, meaning he went up to heaven, in other words, right, to receive the Torah before Shavuos. The Malachim said to God, what exactly is he doing here? Like, what is this human being doing here? So Hashem said, he's come to get the Torah. So the Malachim said, what? The Torah, the treasure Torah, the Torah that preceded the world, and you want to give it away to human beings, flesh and blood? So Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, you got to handle your own defense. Okay. So what Moshe Rabbeinu answered, there's a different version between what the Gemara says and what the Medrash says. The Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu said to the Malachim, listen, let's have a look at the Torah, right? And you'll see it's not applicable to you. It says, I'm Hashem, your God, took you out of Egypt. You didn't go to Egypt. It says, you don't steal, don't commit adultery. You guys don't have evil inclinations. You're not attempted to commit adultery or to steal. Torah is not for you. Obviously, it's meant for the human being. Okay, that's one answer. But there's a medrash that says that Moshe Rabbeinu said to the Malachim, you can't get the Torah. You broke the Torah. You went to Avraham Avinu and you ate meat and milk together. So you can't get the Torah. That's what the Midrash says. So obviously it's a problematic thing. First of all, what do you mean he broke the Torah? If they broke the Torah, so did Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was the one to give them the meat and milk. Right? So why should Moshe Rabbeinu be any more deserving of the Torah than the angels? If in fact the angels broke the Torah, they were given by Avraham Avinu, the first Jew. So why isn't Avraham Avinu in trouble if they're in trouble for breaking the Torah? Second of all, they didn't break the Torah, as we just said. Why did the Malachim turn around? And they should have said, what? You don't remember Shulchan Aruch? See, you shouldn't get the Torah. Simple din in Shulchan Aruch. If you eat milk and then eat meat, it's fine. Right? So what's this all about? So I once saw pshat, such a beautiful pshat. It's a bit of an interesting chap. So bear with me and hope I'll be able to make it clear. About what actually the discussion was. Actually, it was a very deep discussion. What happens as follows. We know that there's a halacha that after you eat meat, you can't eat milk for a long time. You have to wait, correct? However, after you eat milk, you can eat meat right away. Why is that? Why is that? Why the difference? Yes, that's what it says, digest. Actually, not so much to do that. It is a little bit to do with the digestive process. But also, if you look at Shulchan Aruch, on a simple level, it's got to do with meat gets stuck in the teeth and it's around for longer, the taste of meat lingers longer, whatever the case is. That's right. It's okay. It's on a simple level. However, there's a very interesting Kabbalistic reason of why after meat you can't eat milk, but after milk you could eat meat. And it goes like this. You have to know a few different concepts for this. First of all, we know that meat and milk represent two different personalities, two different emotions. Meat represents gvura and milk represents chesed. Now, as we talk about many times, chesed and gvura are both necessary things, but in order to ensure that chesed and gvura work well within the person, there's something which Kabbalah refers to as hagbara sa chesed ala gvura. Chesed always has to be the dominant force. Right? The underlying thing, like for example, when Hashem created the world, so he started with chesed. The first day was chesed, the second day was gvura, but it says, Olam chesed yibona. It says underlying the whole creation of the world is Hashem's chesed. Then in order to make a functional world, you need chesed, you need gvura, you need many things. Same thing. You teach a class, you bring up children. The underlying force always has to be chesed. We have relationships with other people. The underlying force always has to be the connection, the love, the bond between people. However, in order to make sure that's functional, gvura is a necessary component, right? So chesed always has to be stronger than gvura. Incidentally, if you ever saw a Hasidic kapota, have you noticed that Hasidim, they wear the long black coat on Shabbos, it's buttoned right over left. Have you ever noticed that? Different to what men normally do? Yeah. Have a look at this time. It's buttoned right over left. Because it's Kabbalistic. Kabbalistically, you're supposed to button your suit, even men, right over left, because right is chesed, left is gvura, and the right should always be stronger than the gvura. Anyway, interesting thing. Everything has a reason. Yeah? So, okay. That's one concept. Now I'll tell you a different concept, which comes from the world of halacha, but it's got to do with this idea. There's a dispute in Shulchan Aruch, and it's got to do with the laws of Shabbos, the laws of Treif, that when something is on top of another, what's the more dominant one? The bottom one or the top one? It's called in halacha tato govar or ilo govar. Which means like this. For example, without going into all specifics, but it relates, let's say, on Shabbos to the laws of cooking. So if you pour something cold into something hot, so the hot's at the bottom and the cold's on top. And there's a danger that the hot will cook the cold. So it makes a difference in some cases, not always, makes a difference what's on the bottom, what's on the top. So there's a discussion in Shulchan Aruch, if one's on top, one's the bottom, will the cold cool down the hot, or will the hot heat up the cold? It's got to do which one is the more dominant one. So there are opinions that say, ilo gavar, what's on top is more dominant. In other words, the top will affect the bottom, and therefore the top is the more dominant one, and the stronger one, the main one. Others say that tato gavar, the one on bottom, is the most important one. It's got to do with the laws of kashrus as well, if something tray falls on something kosher, or vice versa, and they both thought, but which one is absorbing the other, which one's stronger than the other, and so on and so forth. We happen to paskin, by the way, that tato gavar. We paskin that the one on the bottom is the more dominant one.
What do you mean by
we? Jews. Shulchan Aruch. Yeah. No, what I mean to say is that I mean later generations after the dispute took place, when it's a halachic dispute which is resolved, and we paskin, we as collective jury, generally speaking, paskin that.
You don't mean
No. I didn't mean that Hasidim and Hasidim. No, I meant we as, in general. Yeah. Okay. So therefore, our peak Kabbalah, they say, this is the reason why after meat you can't eat milk, but after milk you can eat meat. Why? When you eat two things, so obviously the one you eat first is on the bottom, right? Goes in first, that's on the bottom. So you eat meat first, meat is gvura, and then comes milk. So gvura is at the bottom, and the milk will be on the top. And that's not good, because then the gvura will overpower the chesed. So therefore, when you eat meat, you have to wait first till the meat is fully digested, then you can eat milk. Because you don't want the chesed being weakened by the gvura. Okay. But if you eat milk first and then meat, then it's not a problem to eat meat right after milk. Because if you eat milk first, the milk's on the bottom, right? And therefore, the chesed is on the bottom, and you eat meat right afterwards, the gvura is on top. Chesed on bottom, gvura is on top. Tato, gavra, the lower one, is more powerful. And therefore, that's a good thing, because the chesed is more powerful than the gvura. Yeah, following so far? Okay. Comes along Moshe Rabbeinu to the Malachim and says like this. You want the Torah, right? And we say we want the Torah. Now Hashem created two realities. He created Shamayim, He created the heaven and the heavenly beings, and He created this world, the lower world. Right? Hashem wants to give us the Torah. We want to get the Torah. Why? Because we claim that Tatogar, we claim that what's on the bottom is more important. So therefore it's more important to give the Torah to this world. Because this world will affect the whole of existence. When we keep Torah mitzvahs in this world, that will affect the higher worlds. And we believe that. That's exactly what's true. We believe that when he does a mitzvah, it's not only affecting this world, it's affecting all of the worlds. You coming along and saying that you want a Torah. What does that mean? You coming along and say you want a Torah because it must be that you maintain or you want to paskin that what's on top is more important. That's why Shamayim needs the Torah, not Oretz. Heaven needs the Torah, not the earth. Correct? Ah, says Moshe Rabbeinu, if you maintain, I've caught you out. He says, if you maintain that what's on top is more important than the bottom, and what's on top will overpower the bottom, then you broke the Torah. Because if you maintain that, then your system of paskening when it comes to meat and milk should be the other way around. Whatever's on top is more important. So therefore, after meat, you should dafke eat milk. But after milk, you shouldn't eat meat. Because after milk, and you eat meat right after milk, the meat will be on the top, gvura is on the top, and therefore it'll overpower the chesed, it's no good. So you should have a reverse system of the paskening. But when you went to Avraham Avinu, and he gave you, as the pasuk says in the order of the pasuk, vayikachem avacholav, he gave you butter and milk. And then he gave you meat, and you ate the milk, and then you ate the meat. So you broke your own rules. You went according to the shitta, you went according to the opinion that tatogava, that what's on the bottom is more important. And that's why you were okay to eat milk chesed, which is then on the bottom, which is then followed by meat, which is on the gvura, and that's okay, because the milk overpowers the meat. So therefore, you can't get the Torah. The Torah belongs in the bottom. And that's the way he stumped them. That's what it means you broke the Torah. As far as we're concerned, they didn't break the Torah. But he was trying to say, because they did it according to what we paskin, we eat milk and then meat. But he's saying, if you want the Torah, then it means you have to paskin differently, that what's on top is more important. But then by your own rules, you broke it, and therefore you can't get it. Nice pshat. Okay.
But what's the bottom line? The bottom is...
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. No, it fits in. We paskin that what's on the bottom is more important, which fits into the idea why we have the Torah.
Yeah.
Because the Torah is on the bottom, and therefore when the bottom affects all the worlds. Yeah. Yeah, so it all fits in. Okay. I'll just show you two more things on this area of the Chumash before we move on to the end of the parasha. Just two Rashis. If you look at the second Rashi on your handout, it says that Hashem came to visit him, v'hu yoshev, and he was sitting at the end, at the opening tent, right? Now, it's a funny thing. Don't you think that if Hashem came to visit you, you would stand? Right? So Rashi is bothered by that, obviously. So Rashi says, yoshav ksiv. It says like yoshav, he was sitting and he wanted to stand, actually. But Hashem didn't let him. Why? When Hashem came, he was sitting. Then says Rashi, Bikesh Lamoid, he actually wanted to stand. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem said to him, Shave, sit, Vani Emod, I will stand, so to speak. Ve'ato simon levanech, and that will be a sign for what's going to come to your children. She'osid anili hisyatze ba'as hadayonin ve'hen yoshvin. Because when there will be a court of law, right, the halacha is that a beis din who sits have to sit, the dayanim have to sit, the judges have to sit, the witnesses have to stand, but the dayanim have to sit, the judges have to sit. But Hashem is there, because we know that if a Sanhedrin or a Beis Din runs a proper court of law, Hashem is part of the system, and it says in the Pasuk, Shenemar, it says, Elokim nitzav ba'adaskel, God is standing in the congregation of God. In other words, in this holy congregation, Hashem stands next to the dayanim, so to speak, helping them out. So Hashem said, Avraham, you sit, I'll stand. Will be similar to what's going to happen in the future Batei Din, in the future courts of law, which will be done by your descendants, by your children. So that's just a nice symbol. The question is, however, what's this going to do with the court of law? So it's interesting, some of the Freshim point out that just after this case, when the Malachim go away, you see Hashem starts telling what he's about to do to Sodom. And they have this whole debate. Avraham Avinu debates Hashem about whether to save the evil city of Sodom or not. And Avraham Avinu argues the case that it should be saved. And he says maybe there's some tzaddikim, there's some righteous people. Hashem says there isn't. And eventually Avraham Avinu loses the battle. But it becomes a court of law. And that's why Hashem wanted that set up. Because Hashem wanted actually him to rule. And Hashem said, I want to tell Avraham Avinu what I'm about to do. I want him to agree with me. And that whole meaning turned into a court. Turned into a sort of a legal debate whether they should be killed or shouldn't. So it's interesting how that's associated with the interesting of court of law. Just one more thing. We know that Avraham Avinu asked the Malachim, asked these three angels before they come into the house to wash their feet. So Rashi says, that's the bottom Rashi on your handout. Rashi says, V'rachatzu ragleichem, wash your feet. He says, Kesavur, he thought Shehem Arvayim, that they were Arabs. Now Arabs, by the way, then is not the Arabs of today. It's because the father of the Arabs didn't exist yet. Ishmael hadn't been born yet, right? But they were the natives of the land. Shemishtachavim, and they were pagan worshippers, and they were Arabs. Shemishtachavim la'avak raglehem, that they were bowed down to the dust of their own feet. V'hikpid sheloy lahachnis avoydes elim nebeisei, and Avraham Avinu was very, very strict not to bring pagan worship into his house. So therefore, he asked them to please wash their feet first. Avoloit. But Loit Shlahikbi, Loit, when they went to visit Loit, you'll see it's different. Hiktim Lina Larachitza, he actually let them sleep first, and then wash their feet in the morning. Shenemar says in the Pasuk, Velinu Varachtsa Raglechem, come, have a rest. In the morning you'll get up and you'll wash. Because Loit obviously wasn't that strict about Avodah Zarah in his own home, and therefore he let them do that. But Avraham Avinu wouldn't do that, and Avraham Avinu made sure that they wash their feet first, and then they come into the house. Just two interesting thoughts on this Rashi. First of all, something I mentioned before, but it's an amazing thing we learn from this Rashi, about the chesed of Avraham. You know, there's kindness and there's kindness, but Avraham Avinu's chesed, Avraham Avinu's kindness was one that came from strength. It came from conviction, came from a set of values. Which is why, as hospitable as he was, and as Avraham Avinu we know was the epitome of chesed, but it had certain boundaries. That's the chesed and the gvura combination. Avraham Avinu was 99 years old, healing from a surgery, and he was trying to have guests, and he was running after them, and he was running to the cattle and shechting and running around. I mean, which was probably dangerous to his own health, but he went out of his way because he wanted to be hospitable. And yet, he wouldn't let them into the tent unless they washed their feet. Because he says, hospitable, hospitable, but Avodah Zarah, pagan worship, is not coming into my house. Which is an interesting, interesting perspective. But I saw just a beautiful little thought. What kind of pagan worship? I mean, not that we have to try and understand all forms of pagan worship, because they are often very bizarre. And they were very bizarre in times of pagan worship. They were crazy kind of. But just to try and make sense of it a little bit, what kind of pagan worship is bowing down to your dust to the feet? I mean, isn't that like a crazy thing to do? So I saw a nice interpretation that's actually when we decode things, they're not so crazy. In fact, not only not so crazy, but in a subtle way, we tend to do the same thing. In those times, the who were the? I mean, who did Avraham Avinu think they were? He thought they were traveling Arabs. Traveling Arabs were people who used to go from one place to another, not for recreation. He used to go. This was their job. They would go, they would sell, they would buy, they would go. And in other words, their whole success came from traveling. That was the whole occupation. They would travel one place to another, make a home for themselves, make a business for themselves, whatever they were doing, but it had to do with travelers, and that's why they were traveling, or that's why he thought they were traveling. And at that time, what happened was they developed a big mistake. People who had success started to believe that the success is of their own doing. And that's the depth of this pagan worship. Hishtachavu la'avak raglaim, they started to bow down to the dust of their feet. Dust of their feet was a symbol of their own travels. They started to believe that their own travels are successful and they the ones making it successful. Similar to what we all do sometimes. That when we do things, we start to believe that our own achievements were the ones that brought about the success. Where, of course, fundamental to Jewish belief is to understand that even when we do something well, it's not our success, it's Hashem's help. Coming through the things that He asked us to do, the natural order of things, and so on and so forth. So it's not such a bizarre thing, but ishtachavu la'avak ragleihem means people who believe in their own success. And they believe, as the Pasuk says later in Dvarim, that koichi v'oitzem yodi osa li esachai lazeh, that person can fall into the trap to think that my own strength and my own might achieved the success, and that's subtly a form of pagan worship. And that's symbolized by this idea that they bow down to the dust of their own feet. Okay. Let's have a look at the end of the parasha, the ultimate test of Avraham Avinu, the test of the Akedah, and I'll just share with you a few things there. Page 100. Okay, let's just start at the beginning. It says, Vayhi achar hadvorim ho'ela. It was after all these things. Volekim nisos Avraham, and God tested Avraham. Vayomer le Avraham, and he said to him, he called him Avraham. Vayomer, and Avraham responded and said, Hineini, here I am, I am ready to do whatever you tell me to do. Vayomer, and he said, Kachno, take please, as Bincho, your son, as Yichitcho, your only son, as Rahavta, the one you love, as Yitzchak, Lech lecha and go el Oret Samaria to Mount Maria. V'ha'aleyu shom le'oila and offer your son up as a sacrifice al achar lehorim on one of the mountains asher oimer alecha that I will show you. Kliyokra points out, as I said last week, the term, he uses the term here, lech lecha. Same term as the beginning of Parshas lech lecha. Kliyokra says that this was the ultimate completion of the journey of lech lecha, because if you remember I said the Kliyokra says that lech lecha means go to yourself. Discover your inner essence. Where's the inner essence of a person? On Mount Moriah, the place where the Mizbeach was built, the place where Adam HaRishon was actually created from, the essence of the human, where the soul was given. So he says to him, if you travel and you pass this test, as you did the previous tests, you will arrive finally at, you will bring to perfection, you'll bring to fruition this concept of Lech Lecha, of really discovering yourself, going towards yourself and really discovering who your true identity is. Okay. So Avraham Avinu gets up in the morning, he harnesses the donkey, he goes out, takes people with him, and so on and so forth. Turn over the page. Let's just read a few psukim here. It says, Vayoyim Ashlishi, on the third day, Vayisa Avraham es Einav, Avraham lifts up his eyes, Vayar Samach Merochek, and he saw the place at a distance. What does it mean, he saw the place? Hashem didn't tell him which mountain it was. Excuse me, but he saw a mountain with a cloud attached to it. He saw the divine presence on the mountain, so he knew that must be the right mountain. Vayomer Avraham al Na'orav, so Avraham Avinu said to his two attendants who were with him, Shvulachem poi machamor, you stay here with a donkey. Vaniva nar nelchad koi, me and the lad, the child, he was 37 by the way, but anyway, he says, me and the boy, nelchad koi, will go to that place. Venishtachave, we will bow down to Hashem, and Oshuv Aleichem will come back to you. Obviously, his intention at that time was not to come back with him, because the intention was he was going to set Avraham as a sacrifice. Yikach Avraham is atzeh oil. Avraham Avinu takes the wood for the burnt offering. Yosam Yitzchak, he puts it on Yitzchak. Yikach b'yodes ha'esh, he took fire, he took flame, as a macheles and a knife. Yelchu shneim yachtov, and they walked together. Then you have a very dramatic, famous piece. Yoyimer Yitzchak el Avraham Avi. When Yitzchak says to Avraham his father, Yoyimer, he says to him, Avi, my father. He says, father, father. Yoyimer hineni b'ni, he says, yes, I'm here, my son. And he says, Hine ho esh v'ha'etzim, I see the fire, I see the wood. V'ayah ha'seh lo'oilo, where's the lamb? Where's the animal for the sacrifice? Avraham, and Avraham says to him, Elohim yireh lo'y ha'seh lo'oilo v'ni. Hashem will show you, he'll show us for him what the lamb will be. And at that point, Yitzchak understood that it means himself. V'yelchu shneim yachtov, and they went together. Yitzchak was ready to do it. And he still walked together with his father as he did previously. So on this pass, a number of questions. Just I'll show you an interesting thing. The wording is interesting. Let's go back to it. It's Pasuk Zayin, verse 7. Vayomer Yitzchak el Avraham Aviv. Yitzchak says to Avraham, his father. Then there's a whole sentence which is superfluous. Vayomer Avi, he said, father. Vayomer Ani Bani, and Avraham Avinu says, yes, I behold my son. And he says, there's the food, there's the wood, there's the thing, where's the lamb? You don't have to have the whole thing. You could have just started by Yomer Yitzchak L'Avram Aviv, and Yitzchak said to his father, Hine, behold, I see the fire, I see the wood, where's the lamb? What do you have this whole sentence for? So the different Mefarshim answer different things. I'll just share with you one or two of them. The Kli Yochar says like this. Yitzchak already understood that he was the Akedah. He knew that he sensed that he's the sacrifice. But at that point, he didn't understand that it was a commandment for Hashem. So this it's all part of the conversation. Look at the pasuk. According to Kli Yochar, he's supposed to read it like this. Vayomer Yitzchak al Avram Aviv. Yitzchak said to Avram, his father. Vayomer, he said, Avi, are you a father? Are you my father? Like, are you serious? Are you going to do this? And he says, yes, you're my son. I'm your father. I'm a father. I'm still a father, and you're still my son. And to which Yitzchak reacts, and he says, if that's the case, Vayomer, Yitzchak said, then I don't understand. I see fire, I see wood. Where's the lamb? It can't be me if you're still a father. Vayomer, Hashem. And Avraham Avinu says, Elokim yirelasoveni. It's all coming from Hashem. Oh, Yitzchak says, if that's the case, it's different. I'm ready. Right, so it's all part of the conversation. In a similar way, some of the Mefarshim explain like this. That we know that Avraham Avinu symbolized the concept of Chesed. Right? Yitzchak can symbolize the concept of Gevurah. Right? Discipline, strength, and so on. Rejection. Yeah? Resistance. Idea of Gevurah, resisting boundaries. When it came to the Akedah, these two roles were kind of almost reversed. Avraham Avinu became the person of Gevurah. To take a knife and to be ready to shecht your own son, that's Gevurah. It's aggression, I mean, on the surface of it, right? Yitzchak, on the other hand, sort of almost surrendered like a complete love to Hashem, and he said, I'm ready, go do whatever you want. That's more of a chesed thing than a Gevurah thing. I mean, it's chesed with strength, but it's a chesed mindset, it's a chesed process. And this is hinted in the conversation Yitzchak has with Avraham Avinu. Also, he knew that it was coming up. He knew this was going to happen.
How did he know? Where do we see
this? Okay, so it's hinted. It's at the Midrashim. It's hinted. He figured he's going with his father. He's taking him. He left the other two guys there. He's taking wood. He's taking fire. He kind of picked it up.
Couldn't he have thought that maybe Hashem would produce a...
Maybe, but I'm good. But I guess he had Ruach HaKodesh. I mean, he was a tzaddik. He sensed the reality. So he says like this. He says, Vayomer Yitzchak. Have a look at the passage again. 7. Vayomer Yitzchak al Avram Aviv. And Yitzchak said to Avram, his father, he said, Vayomer Avi. He said, I'm the father. I've taken your role. And Avram says, yes, you're right. Vayomer Hineni Bani. I've become the son. I've taken your role. And that's why the sentence is here. Because it's to demonstrate the reversal of roles. That Avraham Avinu, Yitzchak became the Av, Yitzchak became the father, he became the Chesed, and Avraham Avinu became the son, he became the Gevurah. Okay. Let me just share with you a general concept to do with the Akedah. If you go back to the first Pasuk of the Akedah, sorry, the second Pasuk, Pasuk Beis on page 100, when Hashem asks him to do it, he says, Kach no, please take, right? Please take. So the Midrash says that Hashem almost begged Avram to do it. What does that mean? He asked him to do it. He said, listen to him. He said, listen, I've tested you 9 times. Right? I've tested you 9 times. Please listen to the 10th one as well, because if you don't, everyone will say that the first 9 are meaningless. Okay? And that's why he said, Kach no, please take. So that needs to be understood. First of all, why would the first 9 be meaningless? 9 out of 10 is not a bad mark. Right? So that we have to understand. The second thing we have to understand first, however, is to understand the essence of the Akedah in general. What was so difficult about the Akedah? It's a very, very famous question that we constantly mention the Akedah time and time again. Every single day there's a minhag people having the Siddur to say this Akedah, to say what we're learning how to say it. Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we don't stop. Say it Hashem, remember the Akedah. In fact, one of the 3 main blessings in the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah, we ask Hashem to remember us for the good. How do we finish up? What's the punchline of that bracha? Hashem is remembering Noach, is remembering Moshe Rabbeinu, is remembering this, remembering that. But at the end, what's the punchline of the bracha? What do we say? We say, you are a God that remembers us favorably, and you remember the Akedas Yitzchak. You remember the binding of Yitzchak. Please remember it. And just in that merit, give us a good year, right? So the Mefarshim will ask a very, very famous question. What is so amazing about the Akedah? Don't forget, at the end of the day, it never happened. At the end of the day, Avraham Avinu didn't even shecht Yitzchak. He was ready to shecht Yitzchak, but he didn't give up. There are countless stories in Tanakh and in Jewish history where people went for the Akedah. The most famous of them, which was connected to the Akedah, is the famous children of Hannah and her seven sons around Hanukkah time. That was a time during Antiochus, the time of the Hellenists, the time of the Assyrian and the Greeks, where Antiochus gathered the seven sons and forced them to serve the Zorah, and each one was called in front of an idol and refused to bow down to the Getchka, refused to bow down to the idol, and Antiochus brutally tortured each one of them, and he killed them, until he came to the seventh one. It says, it's a very tragic story, the Gemara says, that came to the seventh one. The seventh one was a young boy, and even Antiochus, the evil Antiochus, had some spark of compassion, and he wanted to get out and save face, not have to kill him. So he said to him, listen, come here, my boy. He says, you know what I'm going to do? You don't have to bow down. I'll just drop my ring and ask you to pick it up so it'll look like you're bowing down. And he refused, and he killed that last son as well. And Hannah encouraged it. And then Hannah couldn't take it anymore, and she jumped off the roof. And then she said, but before she did, she called out to Hashem and said, I'm going to go to Avraham Avinu and tell him that he made the Akedah of one son, I brought seven sons. But not only that, it's not he brought one son and she brought seven sons, he didn't even bring the one son at the end. So why is the Akedah so amazing? What is so amazing about the Akedah? So one of the famous, there are many, many explanations. One of the famous explanations is that what is the concept of the Akedah? The Akedah Taka is connected to every single time someone gave their life for Hashem throughout history. What is that called? It's called Mesiras Nefesh, self-sacrifice, giving up our lives for Hashem, or at least giving up our comforts for Hashem. All that whole concept of sacrifice, right? Which is a very integral part of Yiddishkeit, the idea of Mesiras Nefesh, that sometimes we have to be so connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that when it comes to the fundamentals, our bond with Hashem has to be so strong with such conviction to the point that we're ready to give up our life. And there's been throughout the ages of Jewish history, there's been so many examples of people that actually did that. And they gave a kiddush Hashem, they gave up their lives for Hashem, and they were ready to give up their lives for Hashem at least. Right? How did this concept come about? So I'll tell you a famous story that goes like this. Nothing to do with Mesiras Nefesh, but it demonstrates the idea. The Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo, who was the author of the Shulchan Aruch, lived in Tzfas. Very famous tzaddik. Authored the Shulchan Aruch, we still learn the Shulchan Aruch today, his Shulchan Aruch. And he was a very, very big tzaddik and a very big Kabbalist. He also had an interesting thing, that he was given a gift from Hashem, that there was a malach that would appear to him once in a while and learn with him Torah, teach him Torah. There's even a sefer of things that he learned from the malach, it's called Magid Meshorim. He lived in about the 14th, 15th century. One time, Rabbi Yosef Karo was sitting in Tzvas, and he was learning a piece of the Talmud, a piece of Gemara. And on the Gemara, there's a commentary called Tosfos, the grandchildren of Rashi. And he hit upon an incredible question that just came up in his mind. And for the life of him, he couldn't figure out the Pshat. Couldn't figure out how do we understand, how do we give clarity to this particular piece of the Gemara. And he worked on it with great concentration for 2-3 days. And eventually, he revealed the answer. He cracked it. He got it. He understood it, and the Tosfos, the Gemara, was absolutely clear. He found a way to understand it, beautiful, clear. So he was really happy. But by that time, he was absolutely exhausted, so he figured, you know, let's just take a little walk. He goes outside of his shul, his Beis Medrash, takes a bit of a walk, and he walks into another shul where there's young guys sitting and learning. Not great people, but not Rabbi Yosef Karo. He walks to the table of one of the young Hebra learning Gemara, and he sees he happens to be on the same page that he was just grappling with. So he says, oh, I see you learning this thing. So I see you learning this Tosfos. Let me ask you a question. See how you understood it. He asked this very same question he was battling with. He wanted to see what's going to happen. He asked him the question, and the guy says, wow, that's an amazing question. Let me think about it. The guy lifts up his eyes, starts to concentrate. 10 minutes, gives him exactly the same answer that took him 3 days to discover. So even Rabbi Yosef Karo, he felt a bit bad. He says, what's wrong with me? So then why did it take me 3 days to work this out? And he felt weak. I mean, he knew who he was. He knew that he was infinitely greater in Torah learning than this young fellow. So he figured next time the Malach reveals himself to him, he's going to ask him why. He's going to ask him the question. And he did. And the last statement is very simple. Every generation, new concepts of Torah, new concepts of holiness have to come into the world. Torah is evolving. There's new ideas of Torah, new things are taught. The Arizal revealed Kabbalah, this one reveals it. There's always new things of Torah being revealed every generation. For Torah to be revealed, or Kedusha, for holiness to be revealed in the world, it's a difficult process. Once it's revealed, however, it's accessible. What you revealed in that Tosfos, in that learning, was a new concept of Torah that had to be revealed into the world. Your answer, your clarity that you brought about to understand this, your chidush, so to speak, was something completely new that was potentially in the Har Sinai experience but wasn't yet revealed in the world till yesterday, and therefore you had to reveal it. But for you to reveal it, it needed you to reveal it, and it needed you with amazing hard work. Now that you revealed it, this concept is now accessible. Any decent Torah scholar with a clear mind will discover it. And therefore, when you finished revealing it, and then you went out and you asked the guy the same thing, it was in the world already. So it was accessible, so the guy closed his eyes for 10 minutes and he came up with the answer. In the terminology, it's called Pasach HaSatzina, the one to pave the way, so to speak. So we say this concept of Mesiras Nefesh, the concept of self-sacrifice, the concept to actually give up yourself for Hashem is a very, very difficult thing. It's a difficult ability to have. The one to bring it into the world was Avraham Avinu. So there might have even been greater self-sacrifices throughout the ages, even greater than Avraham Avinu, but they're all because of Avraham Avinu. That concept of Mesiras Nefesh didn't yet exist until the Akedah, and Avraham Avinu was the one to reveal it into the world, and we inherited it from him. The obvious question is, all very nice to have Avraham Avinu was the first one to do it, but it wasn't the first time that he did it. When he was a child, he jumped into the furnace. Why wasn't that Mesiras Nefesh? I guess I will say it's harder with a child, but at the end of the day, he had Mesiras Nefesh before. So, if he was the first one, that's nice, but it wasn't the first time. So it doesn't really answer our question, what's so great about the Akedah? And why did Hashem say that if you don't listen to this one, the previous one's going to be meaningless? And the answer is very simple. Deep but simple. The answer is as follows. There are two types of self-sacrifices. What is the greatness of Mesiras Nefesh? What is the greatness of self-sacrifice? The greatness is that you're willing to give up yourself. You're willing to put yourself to a side for God, that you don't matter. Complete surrender. There can be Mesiras Nefesh where someone dies for an ideal, and if the Mesiras Nefesh makes sense on any level, it's not surrender, it's a great thing, but it's not total surrender, it's actually an expression of yourself. Avraham Avinu started a career of monotheism. He believed in monotheism to the point where he came to a logical conclusion that without monotheism, life has no meaning or purpose. And therefore, you've got to live your life of monotheism and even give up your life for it. Because otherwise, life is absolutely meaningless. And that was the story of the furnace. The story of the furnace was that his monotheistic beliefs were challenged. And by the way, there's examples of that throughout the ages of people dying for their ideals. Not only Yiddishkeit ideals, any ideals. Right? People who live by their ideals, to them it made sense. To Avraham Avinu it made sense, and he was so full of conviction that he was ready to give up his life, and therefore when Nimrod says either you bow down to idols or I'll throw you in the furnace, he couldn't bow down to idols because that would go against himself, his own conclusions, and his conclusions were so strong that he was ready to give up his life for it. But that's not real Mesiras Nefesh. That's not the Mesiras Nefesh that Avraham Avinu brought into the world. That, as great as it is, that's logical Mesiras Nefesh, and it's Mesiras Nefesh which even without Avraham Avinu could be achieved. The Akedah was a totally different thing. The Akedah made no sense whatsoever. Had no logic to it. In fact, not only had no logic to it, but the Akedah went against everything that Avraham Avinu believed in. Can you imagine? Avraham Avinu comes back from the Akedah without Yitzhak and he says, guys, this God that I've been preaching to you for the last, I don't know how long, that you must believe in, just told me to shecht my 37-year-old. And that's what I did. How many people would he be makarived through that? Right? How many people would he be brought close to Yiddishkeit with that? Not many. He would have lost his business. He could have closed up shop. That's Mesiras Nefesh. Siris Nefesh means you do it for God and no expression of yourself. And that's why the Akedah is totally different. All the other nine tests, there was a logical conclusion. Lech lecha, uproot yourself, sacrifice yourself, go to a foreign land, because in that foreign land, you'll further the cause. You live for monotheism, you'll further the cause there. It'll be better for you. You'll go to the Mahara Maria. You'll be able to bring even more people close to the Yiddishkeit. You'll spread more of the name of God in the Eretz Yisrael. Your name will become greater, Hashem said to him. Right? Mitzrayim, he made a Kiddush Hashem, he avoided immorality. All the other nine tests were in line with his logical beliefs and his convictions, and they were good for the cause. It still takes amazing strength to have that sacrifice. We're not belittling it. But that's not the Akedah. The Akedah is total surrender. Irrational Mesiras Nefesh. And that's the true Jewish Mesiras Nefesh, and that's what Avraham Avinu revealed into the world. That's what he brought in as the first one. And that's why even Chana encouraged her son not even to make the appearance of Avodah Zarah by bowing down to pick up a ring. Even though she could have gotten out of it, it's not real Avodah Zarah, doesn't mean it, etc., etc. It was irrational, but she gave up her son's life for that. Why? Because it came from Avraham Avinu. And that's why the Akedah. That's why Hashem says, listen to me this one, because if you don't, the others will be meaningless. Not only meaningless. They won't be meaningless. They'll still be great. But they won't have achieved the real Mesiras Nefesh. In other words, you'll be taking away from them. You'll be showing that as if your first Mesiras Nefesh was really not real Mesiras Nefesh. You're just doing it because that was your logical conclusion. Now, if you pass this test, that reflects on the first nine also that you weren't doing it for that reason. Really, the first nine turned out to be also real Mesiras Nefesh. But only once the Akedah came along. Only once he could show that he was capable of that. And that's what he brought into the world, and he was the first one, and that's why the Akedah is so great. Okay? Just sorry, before you ask a question. Sorry? Yeah, well, that's... Correct. That's exactly the point. Because them it makes sense.
They say it's for God.
Correct. Because in their... Correct. That's the point. Because in their distorted belief, it makes sense to them. They do it because they think they've got things waiting for them up there.
Yeah, but it's such a negative.
Correct. But it's not real Mesiras Nefesh, even in their context. Because they're doing it for a reward. They're doing it because they're doing it because then it makes sense, because they think they'll have a nicer life up there.
Yeah.
Avraham didn't do it for that. He thought his career was over with this.
Yeah, there was no reward.
Just before you go, the next 2 weeks I actually won't be about the shir, but there will be a shir. My son will be giving the shir. Mm-hmm. So Pasha Shir goes on as normal. But I won't be, I'll be overseas by the kinnus.